What is going on, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Rad podcast. My name is Chad, and this week we are joined by Taylor and Sal from the awesome band X Nations. It was for the thrill, the time to kill. All the bridges I could burn. So, X Nations has been a band for about 18 months, and I really dig their style. I think a really cool tidbit of information that you'll actually hear in the podcast is that these guys have actually never recorded in the same studio. So, that means that these guys are working with a lot of distance between them, yet they're coordinating and making some really, really cool stuff. They've got new music coming, a new song on May 3rd. And then a new album coming at the end of June. And man, they're super awesome. And they're really cool people, really fun interview. And I'm super pumped for you guys to hear it. But before we jump in, just like always, I want to make sure that you guys go and give a like and a follow to X Nations. And you know, if you like Sal, if you like Taylor, go give them a follow and a like as well. And while you're at it, don't forget to swing by the podcast. But without further ado, let's just jump right on in. But thank you guys so much for joining me on the podcast. I'm super pumped. Obviously Amanda had reached out to me and you know, said, hey, would you like to do an interview? And I had started following you guys on Instagram just a few days prior to that, and I'd listened to the EP, and I was like, These guys rock, because it reminded me a lot of like of the first album that Bleachers released, and yeah. To me, cool. that's like such a cool genre and style, and it's actually really hard to do that genre well, and so you guys knocked it out of the park. So I'm pumped about this.
Thank you. So that's a huge compliment.
Well,
yes.
So
we love Bleachers.
So obviously we've got.
Obsessed.
Oh, Bleachers is amazing, right? Like, obviously, I mean, everything that he's done has been amazing, obviously fun. And prior to that, I can't think of the project, but, you know, his whole career has been fantastic. But I think Bleachers is my favorite of all of it.
100.
So real quick, we've got two of you guys on here. We got Sal and Taylor. So if you guys want to, you know, I guess whoever wants to go first, but just introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourselves, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the band.
Sure. Taylor, you want to start?
Sure. I'm Taylor. I do drums and synth and I guess whatever else the song calls for at the time. I'm a proud dog dad to a little toy poodle named Poodle.
Oh, nice. No mincing words there. It's definitely Poodle. Just Poodle the Poodle.
Yeah. To the point. He doesn't need anything else.
That's awesome.
My name's Sal. I sing, play guitar, disembodied synth in X Nations. Proud dad also of a 3-month-old human. So that's what I do.
Fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about X Nations. So you guys have been around like a year and a half now as a band?
I think that's well, right.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. I've known you for a year and a half. Crazy.
So how did the band start? Because obviously what you just said, Taylor, kind of alludes to the fact that you met each other and started a band. So how did it start?
We had a mutual connection, and they suggested that Sal and I meet. And at the time, I think we were Facebook friends, but never talked at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I drove from Baltimore up to Brooklyn. I was like, if it's the right person, then it's worth the commute, and we'll figure out how to do the band long distance.
For sure.
So we met up at a record shop called Rough Trade, and we just kind of sat down, and we aligned on a lot of the same things as far as banding. That's like a weird
word.
Just being in a band.
Yeah.
So we wrote Never About the Money, I guess, a couple weeks after we had met, and put it out, and we've just kind of been running since.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's it. And, speaking of bleachers, Taylor at the record store was picking up. I think what I remember you had, Taylor, I think you had Gone Now, and I think you had like a Mountain Goats record or something like that. And I was like, you know what's up.
That's so cool. Yeah, this mutual friend, they were just kind of like, hey, Taylor, you're huge into like actually performing music. You're taking it seriously. I've got Sal here, who's like, how did that connection get made? Obviously, Baltimore to Brooklyn, that's not super close.
Yeah. I went to school in Baltimore. I went to college.
Got it.
Loyola. So I had some people down there just from, you know, going to school, being in bands in school, playing a bunch of shows and stuff like that.
For sure.
And then, you know, my bands prior to that, I've been in a few bands since those days and, you know, always would go down to Baltimore and play shows and stuff like that. So I feel like just over the years, always kind of had a very close connection with, you know, the Baltimore musicians and what's going on down there. So it felt like, when I started, like, you know, when me and Taylor decided to make music together, it felt kind of like, this is so lame, but it felt kind of like coming home in a way. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, like I get to, like, now I'm going to get to go down to Baltimore again. And I hadn't been in so long. And,
yeah.
You know, see a lot of my old friends and stuff like that and go to the spots that, I used to go to all the time. And, you know, we played one of our first shows at Auto Bar, which is like my favorite venue in the whole entire world. So it just felt really good, and it felt like I was returning to this like part of my life that felt really good to dip my toe back into.
That's cool. So when it started, I think you'd kind of mentioned this, Taylor, is you were like, you know, if they're serious enough, we can make this, you know, make this band work regardless of how, you know, the fact that we're further away. So how do you guys coordinate? Like, how did you build the coordination of actually like being a band and being able to practice and being able to, you know, put out music and tour? How you guys arranged that with the distance?
It's actually a lot easier than it ever has been for me before, just because it takes a lot more communication and organization. And I feel like that's something that a lot of bands could easily lack in if they live down the street from each other.
You kind of take it for granted.
We still get accountable.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So like, we're together. We always make it a point, like we have to do a content photo shoot. We have to discuss this, this, and this. Like we really use up the time that we have together
in the
most productive ways possible.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess when it kind of, you know, started and you guys started writing songs, you're like, you realized, hey, both of us are going to take it pretty seriously. You know, how is it that you've been able to grow I guess obviously you've got two different music scenes, which is kind of nice, Brooklyn and Baltimore, but how is it that you've been able to like grow and kind of branch out when you're not able to play a lot of shows? Or are you guys able to play a lot of shows? You just travel a lot.
We're pretty strategic, the shows we play.
Okay.
We don't play too often, but we make it count. What were you going to say, Sal?
No, I think that's pretty spot on, you know, like really knowing, well, you can never know, right? Like, obviously, there's always going to be duds here and there. But
yeah, for sure.
Being very choosy with when we do play is really helpful. I think a lot of it, too, is just, you know, there's a lot that you can do with the internet and with social media and things like that. And I think, you know, Taylor is to show you how the sausage made, Taylor is really the brains behind that. And I think, you know, we all kind of contribute in terms of strategic ideas and the ways that we're going to roll out a song and things like that. You know, there's just a lot that you can do. Like just releasing a song nowadays is like a missed opportunity. Like for our last song, I think we released like a couple of teaser clips. We also, like, I wrote like a poem that like Taylor narrated, like recorded a voiceover to, and then like cut like a video to that, and we rolled that out before the song came out. And then like when the song came out, we dropped a video that we shot on our iPhones, and then we dropped a remix afterwards. It's like, you can, if you're good with your and strategic with your content, I think people really, you know, value that. And that's a really good way that you can grow without, you know, having to constantly be playing shows.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's something that is actually almost more difficult for musicians sometimes. Like for me, for example, like I'm not a musician, but in terms of like the podcast, it's easier for me to, you know, to record an interview, to get things arranged, than it is for me to build up the whole social media side. I'm terrible at the social media side, but that's where the attention is started. And so, so I think that's even more difficult than sometimes even writing the songs, because obviously songwriting is supernatural to you guys. That's just what you do, right? That's kind of part of who you are. And so I think that's powerful, and it's also commendable, because that's a lot of work to do, to have that kind of foresight, right? Being able to see that far into the future, saying, hey, this is how it's going to roll out. We've got this whole plan. And I mean, obviously the song you're referring to is Knife, right? For the most recent release. Yeah. So how did you guys plan that? I think that's something that's interesting to me. How did you plan the release of that song? Like, 'cause obviously you talked about, you know, well, we did the poem, and we did the, you know, the various different posts and the videos, and we've done all, you did all these things, but how did you plan that? Was it very, was it a lot of like strategic, hey, let's plan this? Or was it like, hey, let's kind of see how it goes as the time rolls forward?
I wish we had a really good answer for it, but what was it, Sal? Like maybe like a month or two before it came out, I hit you up and I was like, I've been messing with Knife a lot on the computer. I really think we should release it as a B-side. Like, I think it's worth doing, because originally Knife was going to be on the record, but we wrote Blank White maybe a couple weeks later, mm-hmm. and it just kind of overshadowed it. And
yeah.
We kind of put Knife on the back burner.
Got
so,
it.
We kind of did it all last minute, and then when the song was set to come out, Sal and I pretty much played the, how much do we want to stress ourselves out, because this could be cool and this could be cool, how much content can we finish creating before this song comes out?
Yeah.
And it ended up being the best release we've had, because I think it put a fire under us that that just kept us going. Like, I don't know how we did it in the short amount of time that we had. Like, you put that whole campaign together in a couple weeks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think, you know, what made it easier than most cases for that song was that there's such a clear narrative arc to like that song and such a clear theme. And we decided to, you know, first things first, we decided, okay, this is kind of a, you know, the song is about, for those who haven't heard it or haven't listened to the lyrics, it's about like a relationship, like your first like real love, that kind of like burns up in like a quick blaze of glory, kind of like a really like intense fireball ending of a relationship. And you know, it's a pretty universal thing that a lot of people have experienced. And you know, the first thing we decided to do when we were releasing it was like, hey, let's put this out on Valentine's Day, because that just ties clearly to the narrative of the song.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everything kind of stemmed from there. We created like, we created merch for it, you know, with that theme, with had lots of, you know, knives and hearts. And it was kind of a little bit like early aughts emo influenced artwork,
yeah.
Which, you know, we all love. And then, you know, we, the video kind of, you know, took on that same theme too.
Yeah.
And you know, with the help of iPhones and things like that, you know, you're able to film stuff that looks pretty good.
Quickly. Yeah.
So, yeah, it all kind of came from that central theme, which helped, because it gave everything something to tie back to, and it gave everything a purpose and a real, lens that we could gut check everything against.
Yeah. That's awesome. I like that. And honestly, I had this random thought when you said, you know, with iPhones, it makes things easier. I was I was watching this movie. I cannot remember what it was called. It was shot completely on an iPhone. It was like, you know, commended for all of its like kind of stretching the boundaries, but I just couldn't finish it because it was too boring. But I was impressed that it was shot on an iPhone, but I just couldn't get into the movie. Anyway, totally random, but it was supposed to be like some suspense movie about a girl who goes to someplace. But so, I mean, did you guys film the whole video on your own, or did you have like someone else like stepping in and helping out a lot?
It's pretty much all. So there's two sources of footage on that. Some of it is Creative Commons footage that we found online. So just like really searching to every corner of the internet to aggregate all these kind of like clips of New York at night and neon footage. I think like we found some like cool like footage that was shot on like some analog camera of like 1970s New York and Times Square, like neon stuff. Then we found some cool more modern stuff, and then you know, some of the B-roll and all of the performance shots were all done on iPhones.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's so cool. It's so much work, but I think it obviously pays off, and I think it's really cool that you guys were able to make that happen. So just kind of going back to what Taylor was saying, you said this was probably one of the best releases that you've had up to this point. What was it that made this release different than say, like, obviously the Tiny Sound in the Dark EP release?
I think the biggest thing was visibility, honestly. I feel like our social media has grown so much since we've started, like even last year. Like our pages have grown so much in the interaction. And another thing, I just think like the camaraderie in the band was at an all-time high.
Yeah.
As far as like when Knife came out, we were all checking our stats. We were all excited. And, you know, a lot of it, sorry, I'm like rambling now.
No, that's awesome. No, that's exactly what the podcast is about. So.
Love it. Sal, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I think you pretty much nailed it. It was good vibes. I think it was maybe a little easier to wrap our heads around, like, one song versus an EP is like a little easier, I think, to like in terms of staying on message. And that's why people release singles and things like that, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I said before, like in the previous question, just like the fact that everything was kind of laddering back up to this theme, I think really helped us keep everything on message.
That's awesome. And you guys, obviously, you know, where everyone's kind of staying up to date, everyone's super excited. I'm just kind of, obviously this kind of ties back to the initial question I asked about how you guys, you know, coordinate and arrange things in terms of the distance. How do you guys maintain like that excitement and maintain like the energy of the band while you're not able to, you know, be seeing each other consistently or being able to play those live shows and kind of build up that, I guess, that personal in person, not personal, but in person kind of relationship. How do you guys maintain that excitement and work together to keep the band super pumped and moving forward?
I mean, I can speak to how I do. I mean, I think it's a couple of things. Like, first off, I think it's the people that like I'm in this band with. It's, you know, Taylor and John are two extremely creative people. I think, you know, me and Taylor are like constantly just kind of hitting each other up with new, I think we both, what has made us successful so far is that we all really think about this as more than just music. And we all are creative people who think about it as more than just like, this is a song. I think we all get super excited about the songs we write too, and that's a huge part of it. That's where it all starts. But you know, we really kind of geek out about all the visual aspects of it, and like, what about this concept for a video? And, you know,
yeah.
What about like, what's the best caption for this thing? And, you know, it's just like a constant flow of like creative ideas. And
yeah,
that is super, super exciting because I don't know, it's kind of like running your own, like little, it's kind of like having your own little like creative agency, like in this band.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. And like, you know, just having people in the band who, you know, really you trust to run with your ideas and you are excited to hear new ideas from, I think just makes it really easy to be just kind of excited about things all the time. And then like Taylor was saying before, like communication, and that's really hard. I think sometimes we struggle with that, but for the most part, I think that, you know, for people who try to communicate clearly and stuff like that, and I think that helps kind of keep things moving along and healthy.
Most definitely. Anything from you, Taylor?
I think you covered it all.
Awesome. no, that's awesome.
That, just, we're always in the group chat, memes, screen caps, and that. Like, as soon as I see a new opportunity arise, I screen cap it and I send it to them.
Yeah.
And I'm usually like, we're really excited, and they're like, yeah, that's cool, Taylor. Okay.
No, I think that's funny, right? Obviously, kind of, I can tell a little bit in terms of your personality that you just like, you contribute a lot, and then you always feel like you contribute too much. But based upon what, you know, what Sal has said, it's not too much, but you always feel like it's too much. That's kind of funny. Cause like, it sounds to me like you guys, I just love that aspect of things when the team is trusting one another, because that's like huge, right? Is like realizing, hey, I'm not the only one here who can create something, allows for that creativity to blossom in everyone. And I think that's super cool. And obviously your music shows it. I mean, you guys had been a band for a year when you kind of compiled the singles that you had written and released and put them into Tiny Sound in the Dark, right? It was just, was it, yeah, a year?
Pretty much exactly a year, maybe. Okay. Just short of a year, right?
Yeah, I think it was just short of a year.
Awesome. So tell me, like, as that built up, right? So that was August of last year that you guys released the EP, right? So tell me about like kind of the journey of that first year building up to that EP. Cause obviously that's a long time. That's a lot of time. So maybe a condensed version, but kind of that journey from, hey, I think our styles and our creativity align, let's make a band, to the point where you release this. I mean, that's a milestone, right? That first major release, not a single, an EP or an album. That's like the milestone, right? So how was that journey getting to that point?
I feel like that's a loaded question. it was a lot of self-discovery, I feel like, as a band. It took us a couple of scrap songs to kind of figure out how to meld everyone's vibes into what X Nations was going to become. Like, I think we wrote, was it Never About the Money and then Rented Room, or was it Distant Drums? Okay. Distant Drums is Celebration Sign.
Oh, okay.
So we wrote like two like very 80s kind of moody songs, and then like kind of like a punk rock song came out after that was very like against me, but with synths, if you can imagine that.
Actually, that's really cool. That's a cool concept.
And it's a really cool song. It just, it never found its place.
Yeah, it wasn't a part of the genre that you guys are kind of creating.
Yeah, to this day, it's still Amanda's favorite song, and she yells at me every day that I haven't bounced her out a copy of it or that we haven't done anything with it. She's like, it's literally my favorite song, and you'll never play it. I get that guilt trip every day of my life.
Is Amanda the mutual friend that kind of got the whole band Amanda's started?
Amanda's my fiance / publicist.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes more sense. Yeah. So Amanda, I know obviously from emailing then. So I know who you're talking about now.
Yes. You can tell her that I sent you Rented Room, and Just kidding. Don't do that.
You totally should. That actually really funny. And then I'll have a copy and she won't. That would be a very large sore point though. So I wouldn't do that.
I'll CC her in the email to you.
Sorry. Go on. So I apologize. I was just trying to figure out who Amanda was in this situation, but obviously I knew who she was. I just didn't make the connection.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. So, I guess self-discovery was a big part of it. We had a little lineup change before the record came out. So there was that. So it was a lot of different moving parts to it. Sal, what would you have to add?
Yeah, I think it was discovery is really the best way of putting it. I mean, for me, before this band, I was just in like a lot of punk bands, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot you can do with, you know, two guitars, a bass and drums, but when you add synthesizers into the mix, it's like just your mind is blown wide open with all the things you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there, a lot of it was kind of like figuring out, like looking at this new like sonic palette and like trying to figure out how it, you know, how I could write things within it that felt really true to, you know, who I was as a music listener and as a musician.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was just like, you know, spending 3 hours going down the rabbit hole of like getting the weirdest arpeggio like sound. But it's funny because like, you know, being in this band has also like totally like, I feel like shifted like what I listen to on a day-to-day basis. Like at the point when I started this band, I feel like I was listening to like a lot of, you know, as Taylor mentioned, like, I was like, it was the summer. I was probably listening to a lot of like Joyce Manor and like Against Me and like,
yeah,
you know, upbeat like poppy punk stuff.
Yeah.
And then now I'm listening to like Lord and like King Princess and like Tears for Fears all the time. And I always like liked a lot of the like, you know, new wave and stuff like that. But it was like, you know, how can I like, you know, reach back and like take the things that I like about The Cure and New Order and like all these bands and then like bring it into something that still feels like authentic to who I am. It was definitely a bit of a balancing act at first because I was coming from that real like punk place, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's probably why we had the song Rented Room and stuff like that, where we were kind of trying to figure it out. But it's been so much more freeing to like let some of that stuff go a little bit and like start exploring new territories. And it's just continued. And I think the sound is like, you know, beyond Tiny Sound, I think it's like for this next EP, like we've really like locked it in even more and it's,
yeah,
like, it's tighter and more cohesive and just more good.
That's awesome.
More better.
Yeah, I feel like a millennial saying like the new EP is a mood. But it really is. I feel like we created this mood and you just go deeper and deeper and deeper into it the further you get into the album. We started tweaking and finessing the final song on the EP earlier today, and I think Sal's caption with the link to listen to it was the sadness knob is to 11.
Yeah,
I remember listening to the demo of the song for the first time, and I was on an airplane coming back to Texas, and I was like, I think I'm getting misty-eyed from this song. Like, okay, it has to go on the record. At first, I was like, no, I don't think there's space for it, and then it like completely won me over. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, it's been a real journey.
Definitely, but it came out a lot easier than the first. I feel like we wrote the album in like 2 months, mm-hmm, all remotely. Yeah. It came out really, really quickly.
That's cool.
Yeah, it did. I think with Tiny Sound too, we were like towards the end, like we had 4 really good songs and then we were like, we need that last song. And like, it was going to be Knife, but then it wasn't Knife. And then we were struggling to find out like what's going to be the 5th song. And
yeah,
you know, that was just part of that discovery process. It was like finding out what we want to sound like and who we want to be. And I think we have a little bit of a better grasp on that now. And that's flow a little more easily.
I just was thinking of kind of like your, what would it be like slogan of your band being like sad, but still dancing. I think that's like such a cool, like, as you guys were talking, you know, that discovery process, getting to that point. I think that's why that first release is such a benchmark, because you can obviously release singles, or you can release, you know, individual snippets of things. But once you kind of put it together and you create that first release, it's kind of defining of who you are. And so I think that's super awesome. So when is the new album release?
It's coming in July. We haven't actually announced the date yet, but is it the end of June? It's the end of June.
Awesome. So obviously you said that the second one came together in 2 months.
Yeah, really quickly over.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah, I mean, 2 months. That was like writing and kind of recording, or was that 2 months of writing and then you've gone together and recorded it?
We've never actually recorded in the same space before.
No way. That's crazy. That's cool.
So the writing happens via Logic, via Dropbox, and Sal and I just bounce everything back and forth until we feel like it's in a place where it sounds kind of finished. And then we send it over to a friend, Eric Taft, to mix and master. And yeah, sometimes we'll track the live drums and stuff with him, and he'll have some good ideas for harmonies and things like that. Like, I feel like our first record, we didn't have any harmonies or backing vocals. And this record's full of falsettos. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, Sal, like, really found pop.
he finally relinquished his hold on punk rock and said, I'll embrace the pop.
Sal is the one who sent me the new Carly Rae Jepsen album. So I think he let that go a long time ago.
I've gone over to the dark side fully.
Well, the fact is, like, this is something that I'm wholeheartedly like into, is the fact that genres don't need to be so definitive anymore, right? Like, people can listen to whatever, just as long as like there's an appreciation for the talent. That's my big thing is even if I don't listen to a genre, I can appreciate the talent that goes into a song, right? And so, yeah. I mean, I may not listen to Carly Rae Jepsen, but I can appreciate the talent she has, right? And so I think that's, for me, that's important.
Yeah.
So yeah. I want to kind of take it way back. I always love to hear kind of the origin stories, right? Like, that's my excitement for the Avengers coming out in 10 days. No, 11 days, something like that. But the origin. So what kind of got you guys into, obviously, Sal, you'd mentioned that you performed or played a lot of shows and were in a few bands while you were in college and stuff. What got you guys to say, hey, I want to be a musician?
I don't think I ever honestly had a choice.
Okay. For
that matter. I was 5 years old and I was asking for a drum kit and no one took me seriously. So they gave me an electric guitar with no amp and they were like, well, see if you still like music and maybe we'll get you an amplifier.
Wow.
So I did guitar. That's totally not what I meant to say. I played guitar until like my early teens. And then I found a friend who had a dad that played drums, like 80s hair metal drums.
Oh, nice.
So I started playing on like an 80s Slingerland kit. It had probably like 16 pieces to it.
Yeah,
like,
those are massive sets.
Yeah, it was completely ridiculous. And he was even like, I'll let you play on the drums, but I have to see like how you actually play before I let you touch my cymbals.
Oh, I believe that.
So he just started me like piece by piece. And he's like, you're picking this up. Like, you have to get a drum kit. So my dad bought me a drum kit on my mom's credit card and it just showed up at the house. Like, it was from Musician's Friend. It was like their brand. It was terrible.
Heck yeah. Well, I mean, that's the classic right there, right? That's when you know that you're into it, is even if you're playing on a piece of junk, it still means something.
Definitely. I had a China cymbal at the time. I just need that to be known.
Heck yeah.
hardcore. I was very into Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I wanted to be. So that's kind of my origin story. But I wanted to be in a band as soon as I got a drum kit. Like, I was out trying to find people and
That's kind of what I've been doing up until now. I feel like I finally found the right people after 10 years of searching. It's crazy.
It's a lot of work to find people who align with what you're looking for, right? I mean, you can find a lot of talented people, or you can find a lot of people who want to play music, but it's hard to find people who align with what you want.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. I think I scared people away with my work ethic before. They're like, I can't do this.
Well, that's, I mean, if there's a flaw to have, that's the flaw, you know, to be someone who takes it seriously and works harder than everyone else in the room. That's a pretty good flaw.
Well, thank you.
So what about you, Sal?
Kind of had the opposite progression in terms of the instruments. So I started out as a drummer, actually. My dad was a drummer. There was a drum set in the basement of my grandma's house.
Nice.
It was his kit. And so sometimes we would go, or when I would go over there, I would just like play drums for hours. You know, like learning like Blink 182 and NoFX songs and stuff like that.
Heck yeah.
I was never a great drummer. I was good enough to be in like a couple of bands, and that band I was in like my college band was I played drums in. So but I really only started writing songs and playing guitar in college. All my roommates pretty much had guitars around.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like had this, I don't know, I think at that time I was like connecting with like, you know, songwriting like as a concept, you know.
Yeah.
I was getting into you know, the music of like people like Elliott Smith and Jenny Lewis and Conor Oberst, the real songwriters,
yeah,
people. And I just felt like there was something lacking in just being a drummer, that I just wasn't able to fulfill this kind of creative yearning that I had as a drummer. And so I picked up my roommate's guitar, to be exact, and started just like trying to learn how to write songs. And you know, I was in a band that I played lead guitar in for a while. That was a lot of fun. And then started, you know, really writing songs that I was singing to.
Yeah.
I think playing drums like has been really helpful as like a foundation, because if you understand that, you understand a lot.
The rhythm of the music.
Yeah. Yeah. So it started with drums, and here we are. But that's pretty much the journey. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So when it came to both of you, obviously, Taylor, you'd mentioned Drop Dead Gorgeous, but, what were some of the bands that like got you thinking, man, that'd be really fun to do that on my own as well, like to be a musician as well?
For me, it was definitely like, in terms of like songwriting, like I said, it was definitely like, I mean, it was, I don't know. There was a lot. Like, I remember like, do you know Drive? You know Drive Through Records?
Oh man, that was the best era of punk rock.
Okay, so I remember getting the Drive Through Records DVD.
Yeah,
and there was this like performance. This is so lame. There's like a Senses Fail 187 video on that.
Yeah,
and like what was so cool about that video was just that it was like these kids who like pretty much like seemed like they were the same age as me, and they were playing shows in like VFW halls and like,
yeah,
you know, gyms and like all this, and they were making it look so freaking cool. Like, and you know, I was already in a band at that point when I saw that. So
yeah.
I guess it's not like totally one-to-one, but I remember like when I saw that, that was the point where I was like, wow, this band is like, now they're playing Warped Tour and they seem like this serious, huge deal, but like, whoa, they were playing like little gyms and stages and things like that, and like still making it look super cool and like fucking rocking out.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that, and that was when I was like, oh, like if I really like, you know, get a little more serious about this, like I could do some cool stuff.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That kind of made me think about it a little more seriously. So thank you, Senses Fail.
Dude, that's still a band that I just love. Even their like new music and stuff, I'm like, geez, these guys are just so much fun to listen to.
I haven't listened to them in a long time,
yeah,
to be honest, but Yeah, I have to check it out.
Yeah.
I re-listened to Let It Enfold You like a couple
Oh my gosh.
Ago,
so good.
Such an experience.
I've just come to terms with being a perpetual teenager, and you know, my musical tastes are just kind of, they just lead me to be a perpetual teenager, and I'm fine with that. I've just accepted it. So when I listen to stuff like Let It Enfold You, I'm like, it may throw me back, but it also reminds me of, oh yeah, I'm still listening to this type of music as a 28-year-old man. So, so what about you, Taylor? What kind of, like, obviously you'd mentioned, you know, the wanting to be a drummer at age 5. That's, you know, that's pretty early. But what was it like at age 5 that was like, man, I want to be a drummer?
I honestly don't even know. All I remember is being so annoying about it. That's like my earliest memory of it, is just being so annoying about it, to the point where my dad would take me to Guitar Center, or like the local music shop was called Musicland, just to shut me up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he bought me so much of my gear that my mom still probably doesn't even know about. As far as like music and stuff like that goes, like I remember listening to Carnivus by Silver Sun Pickups.
Oh, nice.
And I was super into The Cure. Drop Dead Gorgeous was like my tiny like 3-year phase of being a scene kid.
Oh, got
but
it. Yeah.
I've mostly kind of always stuck to the poppier stuff. Like I really loved The Strokes.
Oh, that heck
was,
yeah.
Room on Fire was the easiest kind of intro to drumming, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like it was all like very simple, fun, light parts. So I would play that really, really loud all the time. I turned my stereo up in the boombox and put it next to my drum kit, and I would just play that all day.
That's so cool.
And from there, I just kept trying to find people. And it would always be like a lot older. Like it was very weird. I was in high school, but I was playing with like 26-year-olds. I don't know what they're doing today, but now that I look back on it, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, slightly strange. I mean, I've actually heard that happen a lot of times, though, where you know, between 18 and 25-year-old people will, you know, have 15, 16-year-olds in their band. Typically, though, it's guys with 15-year-old guys in the band. So it's a little different than, like, if it's a 26-year-old guy having a 15-year-old girl in the band. That's slightly different in terms of you know, the there's kind of the idea factor. Yeah, the weirdness factor is like, okay, is this guy well-intentioned, or is he just kind of a sleazeball? But
they all came through like my mom's house, though. That's where rehearsals were, so
hey, that's
kind of funny.
Yeah,
my mom,
she allowed it.
Well, my mom's a court commissioner for Maryland, so
oh.
She would low-key do background checks on these people before they came
That's
over.
Fantastic.
She is still that same person.
Oh my gosh. That's so fantastic, though. Like, I remember, so my younger sister, so when I was in high school and stuff playing music, and I opened for Neon Trees. That was like the pinnacle, but that was before Neon Trees became like the band that they became when they were massive, right? So I was like, man, this is so cool. I opened for them locally here in Utah. And my mom was just like, no, you can't play music like that. And I'm like, what the heck? And then, you know, a few years later, I'm chilling down in Houston, and I find out my sister's opening for Hawthorne Heights, and my mom went. And I was like, what the heck? Like, you went to Hawthorne Heights, yet you wouldn't even let me listen to like Neon Trees? What's going on here?
Your mom is a secret scene kid.
I know, right? She's secret. She's just hanging out and listening to that stuff on her free time when she doesn't let us hear it. But all right. So I love to kind of dive into the non-musical. So this is going to kind of be a fun little turn of conversation here. So in terms of like of you guys, I want to know what your favorite movie is.
This is so hard. I like
if you can't come up with one, come up with like maybe your top few that are like, hey, in this genre, I love these, or this movie. In this genre, I love this movie. Because obviously for me, I wouldn't be able to say my like definitive number one, because I'm obsessed with Star Wars and Avengers. But I also, one of my favorite movies is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So it's like all over the place.
Yeah, I feel that. Okay, so John Hughes movies in general, like 16 Candles.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
I love them. Anytime I can watch them, like anytime I see them on, I'll watch it.
Yeah,
like
Breakfast Club.
When I'm sick, like I'll watch Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, Weird Science, like all of them just yeah. in a row.
Yeah, I mean. Movies.
I liked The Room before The Room was cool. I got made fun of for liking it. Like I was watching it like 7 years ago on like a hard drive. Like it was so bad. And that's like how I would gauge people to like join my band. Like for a while I was like, if you can't sit in The Room, then you can't join my band.
But I mean, I've never seen The Room. Obviously, you know, disaster artist, talking about it and stuff. But like
they did a really good job.
Yeah, I've just
as far like, as like nailing who he is.
I just am amazed that like it's so funny. There's a cult following behind that movie.
Oh yeah, I visited San Francisco a couple of years ago, and there were like posters of him everywhere.
Oh my goodness!
That's where they shot, and that's where he lives. And I was the creep. I'm like, I wonder if like I'll see Tom Mazzeau when I'm crying or something. Like I was really hoping for it. But the best I could do is just get like a selfie with one of his posters. It was a really big deal for me.
That's hilarious. That's fantastic.
I don't know if I really have a favorite movie. Like, I don't really watch movies. It's kind of weak, but
no, do you watch TV shows or do you just not like watch a lot of stuff?
I feel like my wife is really like a huge television head.
Oh, okay.
And she's a filmmaker. That's what
oh, she awesome.
She's always like, she consumes media voraciously and studies it. And she has a podcast where it's called Beaver Talk, shameless plug.
I will put that in the description. Beaver Talk.
it's basically like, feminist take on, media, but it's very funny. Quick-witted.
Nice.
I watch a lot of the stuff that she watches. So like recently I've been watching like a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is a fantastic show. And some like trash reality shows like Vanderpump Rules and stuff like that. But my favorite movie, the movie that I've watched the most is Wet Hot American Summer. I think it's like the funniest like piece of media like of modern times, maybe ever. I've watched that movie like more times than I can count. It's so funny. And I actually haven't really watched the new Netflix series yet. I just feel like I just don't want to like, I don't know. It's like the movie's too perfect. I'm like scared to watch the TV series.
That's but, like the Bandcamp one.
What band?
Isn't that the Bandcamp like about it's the Bandcamp?
It's a camp.
Yeah, oh,
like a kid summer camp.
Got it. Okay.
But like all the actors are like clearly like they're counselors. But
yeah.
They're like just terrible people. It's very funny. I would very highly recommend it.
It's like ridiculous. It's like the pre-Jason. You know, all the camp counselors that end up getting murdered in the Jason movies, right?
Oh my god.
Sorry, yeah, that was a random twist, but
highly recommended. And it has like every actor who's now famous, like Paul Rudd, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Ian Black, Bradley Cooper, Amy Poehler, like so many great comedians are in it. So yeah, check it out.
That's awesome. All right, so switching to another one. What is your favorite non-musical hobby?
Oh,
sleeping.
Cop out.
That's a good one.
I don't ever get to do it. I'll think of a real one while Sal tells his.
I would say cooking, probably. I really like to cook. And most of what I do is just like straight up utilitarian, like cooking, like meal prepping, or I actually enjoy like meal prepping.
Wow. That was the hardest part for me about dieting, like about doing like different diets was the meal prepping portion.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so relaxing to me. I feel like, you know, you use one part of your brain for, you know, like creative stuff, like when you're songwriting, or, you know, I work a 9-to-5. I'm an art director at an agency. So it's
awesome.
It's really like, you know, one way of thinking. And then cooking is like, you can be very, it's a very like singular focused thing. You know? And I put on some music and I make a pizza or something, and it's great.
That's awesome.
So probably cooking.
That's cool. Have you ever, so this is kind of random. Obviously you said you don't watch a whole lot of stuff, but Binging with Babish is probably one of my favorite YouTube channels like ever. And he just cooks, right? But it's funny because he does pop culture foods. So he'll do foods from like TV shows and movies and stuff. So if you haven't watched it, I would recommend watching Binging with Babish. It's pretty awesome.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll check it out.
All right. Did you come up with one, Taylor?
Yes. So before I got heavily into music, I was a super devoted basketball player.
Awesome. So
if I'm like very stressed out, I really like to just go and shoot for hours. That's like one of the most relaxing things that I can do.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a sport that I was never very good at, but it's always a fun one. Do you have a team? I feel like
that's so hard. I feel like I used to be such a Warriors fan, but now it's so commercial.
It's like a cop out now to be a Warriors fan. Like, the problem is, like, I've got a buddy who's a Warriors fan, and he's been a Warriors fan since they sucked, right? And it's like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. You can be a Warriors fan still.
Yeah. That's kind of where I am, but I just watch whatever's on. Honestly, I haven't been super into picking a team since the 90s.
Oh, okay.
Like, I was like diehard Phoenix Suns fan.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the Nash era, right?
Yeah, and Charles Barkley.
Heck, like, yeah.
I don't care what anyone says about him. I love that weird man.
He's psycho, but he's funny. He's interesting.
Yeah, and he was so good at starting fights. Like, I
oh yeah, that. Wasn't he the one? Didn't he say he basically did an interview where he's like, "I'm not an example. I'm not looking to be an example for kids."
Yeah, and he was an example for me.
he defined it. That's fantastic. And the banter between him and Shaq is probably one of my favorite things on TNT. Like that. Game, like the post game and pre game stuff is hilarious. Yeah. To me.
So, he's so opinionated. I love it.
Yeah. It's fantastic. All right. So now on to another one. What is your favorite concert that you've attended?
Silver Sun Pickups at Wrecker Theater. That's not a venue anymore. I was a senior in high school, so it was a very long time ago.
But super great. Just like, who else played with them?
Seawolf was opening.
Awesome.
Like, it completely melted my face off. And then like, a recent person would be Bleachers, seeing him live.
Oh,
and then so Amanda cool. paid for me to have the VIP experience.
Oh, that's
and
rad.
I got to meet him, and I hardcore geeked out.
Oh, and you got to.
Yeah, I was able to get some like songwriting tips and like programs and stuff that he uses out of him. So that was really cool to get to talk music with him for a second.
That's so cool. I remember like hearing an interview or reading an interview. I don't remember, but he was talking about how like when they were on tour doing Fun is when he was writing all of his stuff for Bleachers. And he had his whole album mm-hmm. like pretty much written and recorded while on tour with Fun, like as a band member of Fun. And then was ready to roll as Bleachers. So that was like, I was like, man, this guy just never stops thinking about music. It's impressive.
Yeah.
That's cool. What about you, man?
I think my favorite show of all time. I mean, there's been a few times I've seen this band. The band is Thursday.
Oh, such a great band.
I think that the best show I ever, it's probably one of two. I'm going to go with the first one because it's just more nostalgic, but I saw Thursday at Sonar in Baltimore with Minus the Bear and Me Without You.
Wow. That's so cool. It was
an insanely stacked lineup.
Yeah, for sure.
It's Me Without You right after Catch Russ the Foxes, which is my favorite of theirs.
That's so cool, man.
And it was Thursday. I guess it would have been maybe City by the Light Divided era, or maybe right before. But anyway, it was amazing. And Jeff gave me the mic during Standing on the Edge of Summer.
No
and I,
way.
Like, sang a couple of words, and that
wow.
was super cool.
Dude, that's so fun, man. Those yeah. types of memories are the best.
Oh, so good. And then, like, anytime I see Saves the Day is, like, the best show of all time. And then I also recently, like, 2 or 3 years ago, went to Wrecking Ball Festival in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And it was Thursday's first show back, you know, since yeah. they broke up or many years ago. And the night before they did, like, the official show, they did a secret show.
No
in, like,
way.
This little, like, in the basement of the Masquerade, and Touche Amore opened for them.
Wow.
And it was it was just insane. It was
that's so dope.
Yeah, so it was probably one of those shows.
Oh man, that is so cool. Yeah, oh my gosh, that's so freaking cool, dude. I love live music. Just like seeing those bands. Like the hardest is when you see a band that you really respect and then they suck live. Or in my mind, the best is when you hear a band that you're like, oh, they're all right. You know, and then you hear them live and it makes you change your whole perspective. For me, like those are like, right. Like so cool for me. But man, you guys said you've got the new EP releasing the end of June. Anything you want to say about it real quick?
You can hear the first new single from the EP on May 3rd.
It's May 3rd. Awesome. What's it called? Sorry. I started talking. I apologize.
Oh, it's okay. It's called Tether.
Tether. Awesome. So in terms of what we can expect from the EP, a continuation of what we've had, or is it going to be kind of an evolved version? What can we expect?
I would like to say an evolved version. It feels like an evolved version, a little bit more mature.
Awesome.
I feel like we finally figured out how to build on what we started. Like I consider like Blank White being the, like, since that was the last song from Tiny Sound in the Dark, I feel like Blank White kind of led to Knife, which is going to yeah. lead to Tether in a way.
So kind of progression. I love it. I'm excited. Yeah. I, like I said, I'm a huge fan of what you guys have created. I think you guys are phenomenal. And I'm really excited to hear the new EP. And is there anything else you want to say before we cut it out?
I don't think so. I feel like this is the mood I've talked all day. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It was a lot of fun. You know, especially some of those questions where you're asking about, like, what made the release good and stuff, that got me thinking about this release that we have coming up for Tether. And now my head is turning with like all these ideas and wait. And so me and Taylor are probably going to jump on a call shortly after this. And we got to talk about some stuff, Taylor.
Awesome. Good
stuff. I'm hyped.
I'm so pumped, guys. Thank you so much. And like I said, I'm super pumped for the new album, and great job on what you've released so far. So